And welcome back, folks, to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson, and joining me today is the general manager of PredictionMachine.com, the creator of the Predictilator, and a return guest on the podcast. It's Paul Bessier of PredictionMachine.com. Paul, I would like to thank you for spending some time with CBSSports.com again.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me on, man.
I want to start off by asking you, of course, the Prediction Machine has been one of our experts. We have them up on the CBSSports.com expert picks. You can see the logo right next to my shiny mug right there on the end of the line. And I was just going to ask you, are there any particular teams so far this season, after 3 weeks of play, that seem to be constantly defying the Predictilator, or a team that is sort of hard to pin down trends because they've sort of been all over the place?
But for us, it's I'd say almost all of the Pac-12 seems to be that way, because until Utah won over BYU, that was a team that was a little bit disappointing, obviously, with the Jordan Wynn injury. But we had said that was the third best team in the Pac-12 behind USC and Oregon. And the way Stanford's playing, it's hard to say they're not one of the best top three, if not even better than USC after the game last week. So the way Stanford's been playing, as good as they've been, as early as they've been, has been difficult to really pin down. Arizona and Arizona State, with new coaching staffs, completely different offenses year over year, has been impressive to watch and very surprising despite Arizona State's loss last week. And I'd say that USC already falling out of the ranks of the unbeaten is a little bit surprising as well, because before the season started, we had that team as the most likely team in the country to end up going 13-0. So when it's all said and done, I'd say that it's still very early. Most of the teams in other conferences haven't really played anybody, but the teams that are maybe most surprising and to us so far have been the second-tier teams in the Pac-12 that are a whole lot better than a lot of people, and including us, were thought going into the season.
I agree with you entirely. I think that is one of the early storylines that we've had in college football, is how because the middle of the Pac-12 is so much stronger than a lot of people realize, it makes the whole conference a little bit stronger. Is strength of schedule a part of the BCS title odds, and sort of trying to calculate how a team's BCS ranking would end up being, or is that more to do with the on-field results with the Predictilator?
Well, when I look at our power rankings specifically, that all has to do with who you've played so far. So the inputs are not just what you've done, but against whom you've done, and that certainly matters. And I project then what players and teams are going to do against each other, and how they would fare if every team could play every other team. So that's a little bit different than BCS. Yeah, most likely BCS champions, most likely team to go undefeated, because that's just looking at right now, based on that, the health of all the teams, where do all the teams rank up against each other? And that's why we have currently 10 teams from the SEC in our top 35, 6 from the Pac-12 in our top 35, despite the fact that at the end of the season, that's definitely not going to be true, because when you look at the rankings, that's going to be based on who deserves to be there, and there aren't going to be that many teams at that point from those conferences that deserve to be there. So it's a little bit different. It's kind of two different questions to ask. Our power rankings say one thing, but when we project through the rest of the season, we see teams like Georgia is now the most likely team to go 12-0, but likely would then lose in the SEC championship, or Oregon, as they're now a very likely BCS national championship contender. That's because of what the rest of the schedule looks like and what's already happened to the other teams that they either will have to play or that they're competing against.
I wanted to ask you about Oregon. How are they looking in the PredictionMachine.com power rankings, especially, I know you mentioned them now as most likely to win the Pac-12. With USC losing, they really have taken over as sort of that conference's team to hold up, the nomination to go into battle. And based on what they've done so far, because they've beaten a lot of teams early, and then, you pull your starters and let the other team sort of creep back a little bit, does that hurt them in the numbers when they're all being crunched?
Well, fortunately, we look at what we look at what the players that we expect to be on the field have done. So, for instance, in the game against Arizona that's coming up, when we project that game, which we ultimately say is what 46-32 is our projection. But when we look at that, we assume that as long as that game remains competitive, it's going to be the starters that are in there. So anything the starters have ever done in their careers, not just this season, is what's factored into that. But you're exactly right. They haven't played anybody, and they haven't played anybody, period, with their starters in the second half so far this season. And that's such an incredible offense there, with the loss of John Boyette at the safety on the defensive side of the ball, and already some concerns I had going into the season on the defensive line. I'm not quite ready to say that Oregon's going to take USC's spot as the most likely team outside of the SEC, to make it to the BCS championship game. Technically, that's actually Oklahoma for us right now. But Oregon has moved up to number 5 in our power rankings, all the way up from number 8 before the season, without having to do much because some of the teams in front of them haven't looked quite as good. And I'll tell you right now, if I have to pick a personal favorite for the Heisman the rest of the way, he was the guy that I think you and I talked about as a dark horse candidate before the season. I thought had great value at somewhere in the 30-40-1 range. But DeAnthony Thomas may not just be a dark horse candidate, but he might be the favorite right now to win the Heisman with as explosive as he is. If he can put together a couple of those huge games against quality opponents coming up, he could easily win that thing and be one of the first kind of hybrid players at his position to win in a long time.
Absolutely. I think that if it's, you know, now you assume that Geno Smith sort of takes over as your new front runner, but all it's going to take, and really that Big 12 schedule is going to be so tough. I think I've wondered, after looking through 30 weeks of play, if any team can make it out of the Big 12 schedule undefeated, just because you're playing all 9 teams and there's about 5 or 6 where you could honestly see any one of them beating the other. So if Geno Smith has 1 or 2 bad games and Oregon's able to keep rolling and DeAnthony Thomas keeps up this streak, I could definitely see him being able to definitely get the invite to New York and possibly steal a Heisman.
He's so electrifying. I mean, I literally spent half an hour yesterday in what is already a ridiculously busy week for me, just watching clips from him in high school playing defensive back and middle linebacker. It's just ridiculous. I'm addicted to this guy. I think he's my favorite player to watch in any sport. And that's the fan in me coming out, but his numbers are ridiculous as well. I'm going to gravitate toward players who average about a touchdown every 5 or 6 touches, and whose touchdowns aren't just the 1 or 2 yard variety a la Monty Ball. So, yeah, I've been impressed with them. I am impressed with Oregon. I don't think we're going to learn too much because Arizona doesn't have much of a defense this week. I talked about there being about 76 to 78 points on average in that projection. I don't think we learned too much about the Ducks, but they're certainly going to be one of the favorite teams in the country for a lot of people to watch going forward, and a team that could possibly give an SEC team a run for its money.
Where is Yeah, you said about 74, 76 is the total that the machine keeps giving out, somewhere around there?
Yeah, it's 78. 46 to 32 is their average score. Vegas has the line at 77.5. So I don't have much of an opinion for you there, but it's just ridiculous that the line is that high, and yet we still think it's going to be right around there.
Oh, I was about to say, I think I would – I mean – unless you get up to 78 or 79, I thought I was going to take it. My prediction when I was just tossing around on a radio hit earlier, I thought that it might be 56-35 or 56-38. Mm-hmm. I could see the Ducks after watching Arizona's defense so far. I mean, especially knowing that both defenses are going to be gassed by about the middle of the third quarter. I just think the touchdowns are going to keep coming well into the fourth.
Yeah, I'm not against that by any means. That certainly could be the outcome. That is going to be the theme of that game, and it could end up being the most fun game to watch of the entire weekend for that reason, because of all the speed on the offensive side of the ball and all the glaring weaknesses that both teams currently have on the defensive side of the ball. It's fun if you like offense, and fortunately most people do.
Yeah, no, we love that. I want to talk about another one of the big games this weekend, the top 10 tilt in the ACC. First top 10 matchup of top 10 ACC teams since 2007. What's your read based on the power ratings in Florida State Clemson, and also what's the machine spitting out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's from 50,000 simulations. I'll get to that in a second. You mentioned it being a top 10 matchup. We've got Florida State here, clearly a top 10 team. We have them right now as number 8 with the top 5 defense. Number 1 against the run, number 3 against the pass. It's absolutely ridiculous how good their defense is. And that's based a lot on what they did last year because, again, they haven't played much. But offensively, they've looked pretty good as well, and I think that's a team with a lot of talent. Clemson's a team with a lot of talent and playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. But they have concerns on the offensive line, and while they've recruited very well on the defensive side of the ball, I still have some concerns there as well. I wouldn't call Clemson a top 25 team, let alone a top 10 team. We currently have them at 26. I don't want the Clemson fans to freak out too much. They're the first team outside of the rankings right now. But when you've got a top 10 team taking on a team that wouldn't be ranked in most polls, and that team gets to play at home, where they're one of the better home field advantage teams in the country, we love Florida State in this matchup. 35-17 is the projection. Where Florida State wins over 75% of the time straight up. It's not necessarily going to be a lapper or a blowout, but by more than 2 touchdowns is our expectation for the Seminoles.
Yeah, I've got a similar read on the game where there's just And it was interesting you mentioned recruiting well. This is a game where somebody like a five-star recruit like Stephon Anthony, the linebacker for Clemson, you know, this is a time when he can step up, because the rest of that star-studded 2011 class, Tony Stewart's had a couple ACL surgeries. Of course, Mike Bellamy's gone. You know, that Brent Venables and that defense, this would be a time when they need to step up, because it seems to me like the Florida State rushing game has really improved with the healthy Chris Thompson and more experienced Wilder and Freeman.
And best of luck then to Brent Venables and company, because even though the offense isn't the strength for Florida State, we still have it as one of the top 15 offenses in the country.
All right, what's your read on Michigan-Notre Dame, and what's the machine spitting out for or the score there?
Now, I know we didn't catch up last week, and I know in the experts' picks, it technically had a straight-up-wise us picking Michigan State to win that game outright. But we had it as one of the top three closest games out of all of the FBS games last week, where it was only about a 50-50 game, and we had Michigan State winning by 2 or 3 points on average, really just because of home field advantage. And we already had Notre Dame as a team ranked higher than the Spartans in the power rankings. So would that be kind of out of the way to know that we weren't all that far away from expecting that quote-unquote upset? I do want to mention that Michigan's got a far better offense than what Michigan State brought, especially when you look at the quarterback position. Maxwell's going to come into his own. He looked great against Central Michigan, but I might be able to do that given the pass protection that he had and the wide-open receivers that he had. And so I think that you'll see something that is maybe not as high scoring as last year, but something that's just as close as what happened last year. So even though Michigan, in a lot of people's minds, isn't as good as Michigan State, I think they're a better competitor even to go into Notre Dame and keep this close and at least keep it a game. 25-20 is our predicted score. Notre Dame does win. They win by a little bit more than their home field advantage would suggest, but they're a slightly better team. So they're up to number 12 in our power rankings, Notre Dame is. But Michigan, with that offense, should be able to put up one or two big plays, kind of like we saw last year, and stay competitive. Only 55% of the time does Notre Dame win out of the 50,000 simulations this game.
Man, wow. I want to ask you another one, especially noting the power rankings. Missouri has their first SEC road game traveling to play South Carolina. Missouri unranked in the polls, South Carolina number 9. But in your power ranking, South Carolina's 11, Missouri's at 15. I'm guessing that you're predicting a much closer game than some might assume.
Certainly. And I mean, it's about a 10-point line or so, and I'd say that a 7-point outcome, given the fact that it's in South Carolina and that Missouri's offensive line's a little bit banged up, where the advantage would be with South Carolina, which lost a pass rusher to the first round last year, yet still has two better pass rushers, at least, on its defensive line right now. It's an impressive situation to watch with them, and I think they'll own that line of scrimmage there. Franklin, if he plays, and I'm assuming at this point he will, and that he'll be healthy enough to do so and feel well enough to do so, I think he'll be able to get the ball up and down the field vertically when he can stand up. And if he makes it through the entire game with the concerns that South Carolina has on the offensive side of the ball right now, and with the speed that we've seen from the Missouri defense being able to compete with the SEC, I think this will be a very close game. You mentioned it's only four spots away in our power rankings. 28-21 is the prediction. This game, we're at Mizzou, where Missouri is the best home field advantage in the SEC. We probably have it as a 1 or 2 point game, and it could easily go either way. But at South Carolina there, we do expect the Gamecocks to win about 65% of the time straight up.
What would you say is the statistical home field advantage for Oklahoma playing in Norman under Stoops? Because the history is, 78-3? Again, and then maybe undefeated against ranked teams. It's something ridiculous.
Yeah, I did some analysis on this over the summer, and Oklahoma has the number one home field advantage in all of college football. And you know, the SEC teams got on me, and the fans didn't like the fact that we had all the SEC teams ranked basically in the, you know, from 100 to about 115 in our rankings in the home field advantage. But what that means is SEC teams are consistent. They play about as well at home as you do on the road. I'd probably rather let my team do that. But if I'm not rooting for one of those teams and I can make a difference, home field certainly seems to make a difference when it comes to the Big 12 in general, and definitely then for Oklahoma itself. And so that means, and this is going to blow people away, there's a different number in our calculations for every single college football program and team in terms of their home field advantage. Maybe it's 0. For Oklahoma, it's about 8.5 to 9 points. That's how big this swing can be. A lot of people think it's 3. For Oklahoma, it's almost 10 full points. It's more than a touchdown. For Wisconsin, the only other team, that's greater than a touchdown as well.
10? That's two scores right there.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, you just hand them to you. Well, and if you think about it, that's also then if Wisconsin played against Oklahoma in Camp Randall, and it was an even game otherwise, Wisconsin would be projected to win by about 7 or 8 points. If Wisconsin goes and plays at Oklahoma, we'd be projecting Oklahoma to win by about 8 or 9 points, meaning that there could be up to about a 16 to 17 point swing in the most significant situation, whereas the expectation in the average situation is only about a 6 point swing.
One team that's been on the rise, you know, we talked about Stanford. How are you seeing the rest of Florida's season playing out? Because they've improved a lot. There's not a lot of expectations, which makes their success to the fans at least seem better. But how good can they be, and where do you see their chances of being in Atlanta at the end of the season after stealing an SEC East title?
Yeah, I don't think it's great, and we didn't have them beating Tennessee, so you know that we didn't think they were going to be quite that good. Now, Florida has moved up to number 10 in our power rankings. I think that expectation for them last week was more about what we thought Tennessee would be able to do offensively versus what we thought Florida would be able to do offensively. And since offensively it's still hard to trust Jeff Driskel at this point, and I don't know if they're going to be able to run the ball as successfully every single week, week in and week out, as they did last week, I don't think that there's a team that can compete for an SEC champion. It's going to compete, but I don't think it's going to be the team at the end of the day that wins that. We still like Georgia. I think South Carolina is basically the same team or so. So, yeah, that game is going to be a coin flip. They'll likely lose to Georgia, and I think Georgia ends up winning the SEC East. But if they can steal another one, which they would have to against at least the Bulldogs, they could be there. But they're going to be underdogs in our numbers in that case.
Do you see the Bulldogs being able to cover, I guess, what is about a 13.5-point spread against Vanderbilt, a team that I thought was a lot more of coming into the season, but, you know, obviously the 3 weeks have played it out a little bit differently.
Yeah, and the numbers actually come way down, so I think a lot of people think that Vandy can cover that, the original number, because I think it was around 17.5. We posted it around 15. The number, I think, has come down to 13. And I think that Georgia hasn't looked as good offensively as they're going to be throughout the course of the season. They've looked good, but they haven't really had to play anybody. I think that's meant a lot to those expectations. They went on the road in Missouri and were close throughout three quarters, pulled out at the end. Here, I think they'll win, maybe not comfortably, but in a deep, more of a defensive battle that's going to be low scoring. I think Georgia wins this game by its defense shutting down Vanderbilt. 29-18 is the predicted score that you can see. Then even on a 13-point line, we'd expect Vandy to keep it closer. But Georgia still wins pretty handily over 70% of the time.
What's the other – we talked about Matt Barkley. We talked about Geno Smith. We talked about the football mamba, DeAnthony Thomas. What are some other players that would have a chance to jump up into the Heisman discussion according to sort of what you're seeing?
Well, I think we're in a position right now where none of the elite quarterbacks have really done much. You know, the guys that we thought were elite quarterbacks, the future NFL prospects, we talked about Matt Barkley, and I'm not sure losing his chances is exactly what he did, but he certainly didn't put together a good performance against Stanford, and he's not at the forefront of the Heisman right now. Logan Thomas, Tyler Bray, Mike Glennon, Denard Robinson, all those guys were highly touted quarterbacks going into the season and faltered in big games that they've played so far. You know, some of the guys who have put up big numbers, Geno Smith, Landry Jones, even Marcus Mariota or Casey Pacall or E.J. Manuel haven't really played anybody. So any of those guys, I think, could emerge if most of those guys are playing at least better competition than they have thus far. But I think this year is really more of the year of the running quarterback. You know, there's a huge group, and I mentioned it on my blog, and it's about 25 guys. But there's 25 or so quarterbacks that are leading undefeated FBS schools right now who are basically run-first quarterbacks. Guys like Braxton Miller and Colin Klein, as well as Everett Golson, who's maybe more of a physical player but still can run the ball and does run the ball quite a bit. Any of those three guys that's currently leading an undefeated team, I think, could emerge as a potential Heisman candidate if you can keep it going. But, you know, when it comes draft time, when it comes to April, we're probably going to be looking at one of those first few I mentioned rather than those guys I just mentioned now that have a chance to Heisman for the NFL draft.
Right, and the Braxton Miller has that unique opportunity at Ohio State where while the Buckeyes are ineligible compete for a Big Ten title, you know, that's still – that I wonder if he would even get, you know, a little bit of extra support because that's the one trophy that sort of the program could bring home this season.
I think that, I mean, and then you're getting more into psychology and things that I don't necessarily need in predicting, but I think that's an very interesting point. And if he puts up the numbers that he's put up so far and the team goes something, you know, whether they go undefeated or 11-1 or 10-2, if he puts up big numbers in big games, I think that theory makes a lot of sense.
Is there any one pick on the week four board that the Predictilator surprised you with the game prediction?
Well, we it's not necessarily the winner, but it's by how much, and we kind of danced around it earlier, and I think you might have been aiming to ask me the question, and we just kind of moved on from the home field standpoint. But since we love Oklahoma's home field, and because they won 58-17 last year in Manhattan, it did surprise me to see us like Oklahoma to win by 24 points, but I get it. I think there's just too much of a physical athletic advantage between Oklahoma and Kansas State to make up for whatever Bill Snyder's magic might be able to do in keeping most games pretty close. Layer in the home field advantage, and it may not be as surprising, but when I ran the games initially and saw that, I thought that was a little crazy to see a team that a lot of people have in the top 25 losing by 24 points on average.
That is a surprise. But I tell you, there is something. I mean, that's when I was making my predictions, that's sort of where I was at. I just looked at it and I said, well, I don't think that this Kansas State team, and I see they're pretty, where are they, 25 or so in your power rankings?
Yeah, 25. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I this team, as great as they've been and as good as Colin Klein is, I don't think this is going to be the team to go against years and years of history. And like, as you just told me, a 10-point home field advantage, that doesn't seem like the team that's going to break the streak.
Exactly.
He is Paul Bessier, PredictionMachine.com. Make sure that you go there. You can read his blog. You can check out the power rankings that we've mentioned here, as well as be able to get all of the picks and from the Predictilator, which gives you score projections for every college football game. He's also got NFL and lots of good explanations behind them both. Paul, thank you once again for hopping on the podcast.
Appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Folks, remember you can check out every CBSSports.com college football podcast at iTunes. Be sure to get there, subscribe, leave a review, like it, and share it with your friends. Thanks so much for tuning in. Enjoy week 4.